We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
A Radio.com sports station. Two Wisconsin guys talking Wisconsin sports in the morning. Broadcasting live on the Radio.com app. 1250 AM and 105.7 FM The Fan. It's time for Chuck and Winkler in the Morning, live from the Bryant and Stratton Bobcat Studios.
Chuck and Winkler, 105.7 FM, The Fan, Kevin Holden, Ryan Horvat. Right at the moment that you turned the microphones on, I did something to my headset.
Can you hear?
Well, for a second, it sounded like when something's way too loud, like when they mix a song way too loud, and it's just
overmodulated a little bit.
Now it's all right.
Okay. It's funny, a little behind the scenes, a little behind the biz as we start the show here on Chuck and Winkler. As I was just telling Kevin, I did a whole show last week when all the headsets went out, and you would think, well, I mean, I could still talk, my voice is still there, but when you can't hear yourself through the headphones and you're doing a show, it's actually pretty tough. It was a rough one, man. I was given the lineup. For some reason, I couldn't just say Yasmani Grandal.
Right.
Like a name that you say 50 times per day. And it was just like, it wasn't coming through my headset, so I just couldn't say it.
Tell me they didn't roast you, though. You didn't get roasted on Twitter, did you?
No. Nobody even noticed, I don't think. They were like, hey, it's all right. It was a series against the Pirates. I mean, you know how it goes.
It was going to be a win.
So it's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakery from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, 414-799-1250. We got Ryan Wood coming up, PackerNews.com today at 8:20. Bill Schmidt at 9 a.m. We're going to talk a little Brewers baseball as they get set to take on the Nationals. Kevin, you just flew in. How was Baltimore last night?
Crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does.
Packers lose their second preseason game, a game that we broke down a little bit here on the show yesterday. I want to know right away off the top this morning, 414-799-1250, if anybody out there took anything away from that game. We did get the first team defense and the majority of the first team offense minus Aaron Rodgers. When did you find out Rodgers wasn't playing in that game?
It was I was literally putting the finishing touch on notes. We do a lot of preparation and notes. We talked about this yesterday, how the preseason is so, like, you have to get all these notes together that don't apply to any other game. You can't just live off your knowledge of guys because I don't know who these guys are, you know?
Right.
So I think we were putting the finishing touch on notes. So I'm going to say 50 minutes to air.
50?
Yeah. Okay. 5:40 Central time.
Yeah, because, I mean, we were talking about it all day, and my biggest thing was, what do you guys want to see from Aaron Rodgers tonight? So it's about, I don't know, 15 minutes before kickoff, and I was off Twitter. I had to pick my son up from the YMCA, and he was at swim lessons, which is always a big pain because I got to get him out of the pool, which is tough enough.
Right.
And the lessons are already over, but they get to do like a free swim, so I got to get him out of the pool, change his clothes, throw the swim trunks in that little machine that dries them, so then got to get him in the car seat. We finally get home, and I check Twitter, and I see no Aaron Rodgers. And I knew something was up because I was getting pretty close to kickoff, and I turned the TV on, and I see Manny Wilkins leading the gang out of the tunnel, and Deshaun Kizer's getting all the television love, and then Aaron Rodgers is sitting there in no pads, and I'm like, what's going on here? And then we get Kizer to start the game.
It's fun, right? And here's the thing. If you are in preseason overreaction mode, if you're the type of person that responds to these things that happen in the preseason and you're affected by them, you probably didn't sleep a ton last night because, first of all, you were told all week that your starting quarterback was going to play for the first time under Matt LaFleur, and right before the game, your starting quarterback chose not to play under Matt LaFleur. And I get that it's back tightness. Like, we literally said this during the broadcast. It's like, to translate to English, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to be sitting out because he's got an issue with his back, making the air quotes.
Yeah.
Because it's like, really? And you see him and he's smirking on the sideline. But I am doing my best to stay restrained and to not read into this that Aaron Rodgers, after being hyped up for 2 or 3 days, was like, I'm all right. You know, I mean, does it really matter for the regular season? No. But when you have this constant hanging low cloud of quarterback coach relations, I don't know. I don't even know if I want to bring that up, you know?
Well, I think you're gonna have to, and it's a good point because right? Everybody else is gonna bring it up. I was driving into work today and I was listening to the former WWE wrestler who has a radio show now, Taz. He was trying to pronounce names, which is always fun. he couldn't pronounce Adam Schefter or Woj. But anyway, he was talking, that was going to be their main thing, already issues between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. So on the national, if like from an outside perspective, that's probably what you're thinking. When you look at it and you say, okay, you're reviewing all the preseason games last night. So Sam Darnold looked good again last night for the Jets. Lamar Jackson against the Packers leads two scoring drives. And then you're like, wait, what did Aaron Rodgers do last night? Out with back tightness. What's going on here? First, it was the audibles, change in plays at the line of scrimmage. Now, once again, in a game that he was supposed to suit up, he's sitting out. They are saying he's gonna suit up in the third preseason game, and that's kind of what he's been saying. Is I want to suit up and I want to go play in Canada for all of our friends and fans out there in Canada. But it's like you don't want to suit up and play in front of the people that spent regular season money on preseason tickets at Lambeau Field week one. Or even week four against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess there's a little bit to take away. The Packers do lose last night, 26-13. Not that that matters because it's a preseason football game. But I guess my biggest takeaway is the first quarter because you do get the first team defense for the most part. Lamar Jackson looked pretty good.
Yes.
He did look pretty good on a couple of those scrambles that he had. Very nice runs, but he did have two guys open on one of them. I'm still not completely sold that he can make every throw on the football field, but that guy's a playmaker. A little bit nervous about the defense. A little bit of the same of what I saw last year, where I do like the schemes that Mike Pettine draws up, but guys just missing tackles. Za'Darius Smith looks like he fits right in because he had that play where he broke the line of scrimmage. Should have had a tackle for a loss. Didn't wrap up. I said, he fits right in. That's Clay Matthews and Nick Perry right there. Fits right in. All I've heard all preseason was how great Za'Darius Smith's going to be. This guy plays with an edge. He's playing against his former team. Maybe he just didn't want to hit Lamar Jackson since they're old buddies.
Maybe.
Rashawn Gary, I think he had a tackle last night. I'm seeing everything that I thought I'd see from Rashawn Gary. Everybody, a lot of high praises. I watched him a lot at Michigan. He did get double teamed a lot at Michigan. Kind of had to do things that he had to kind of play outside of his position at Michigan, but still, like, all the talent's there, all the physical gifts are there, but he just looked lost at times last night.
Okay. So there's that issue, the fact that I don't know if anybody really flashed, if you're talking about from that linebacker group. The other half is all those inside linebackers, the Ty Summers and Curtis Boltons that played, that's one position where those guys are going to have to play a lot in a regular season. It's different because you can kind of say, well, all right, this dude in the secondary, you know, is not going to play when the games really count. But those linebackers, especially inside linebackers, those are the dudes who are going to play.
Right.
I mean, you had a lot of Blake last night, a lot of Blake Martinez, and then a lot of these guys that you're going to have to get used to. Like, you remember how you had to kind of readjust yourself to Ladarius Gunter?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Ty Summers and Curtis Boltons are the new Ladarius Gunter. Different position, but a similar situation. The other takeaway that I have from this game, and really the first two preseason games, is that Matt LaFleur is a coach that commits to the run game. You know what he did in Tennessee with Derrick Henry? I mean, he had guys, right?
Yeah.
If those guys are hurt in the regular season, I think the Packers are in really bad shape because I have not been even a little bit impressed with the two guys right behind, Trey Carson and Dexter Williams. You saw Dexter lose a ball last night. And again, we're talking about second team everything or sometimes third team everything.
Right.
But in the case of a running back, you should see something in the first couple weeks. And you haven't. And, okay, so that, you know, equates to the offense not doing much in the first two preseason games. And you go, well, Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams will be back. Yeah, but if they're hurt and Trey Carson is out there in a game that matters and Dexter Williams is out there in a game that matters, I don't think I like that right now.
I know, and I was really high on Dexter Williams, and not just because he went to Notre Dame, because DeShone Kizer also went to Notre Dame, and I thought he was awful again last night. He did make some plays, and I think he is the better of the three quarterbacks, not that that's saying much, but he still stares down receivers. But going back to Dexter Williams, I was really high on that draft pick, and I think that he's going to make this team just because you did spend a draft pick on him. But the knock on him has always been that he can't catch balls out of the backfield. He had the drop pass last night, but then the fumble. And yeah, I'm a little bit worried. I'm with you there. And especially, and that's the thing that drives me nuts when we talk preseason football. Everybody's like, well, Dexter Williams, you know, you got Aaron Jones and you have Jamal Williams. Mm-hmm. You're never going to see these guys. You're never going to see these linebackers. But we know Packer football because we've been watching it for our entire lives, and we know how this works. By week four or week five, guys are banged up, and that's the NFL.
Right.
So these guys are going to play, and that's why these preseason games do matter. Do they matter for Aaron Rodgers, Jimmy Graham, Davante Adams? No. But do they matter for Bolton and all these young guys? Even guys like Jaire Alexander, I want to see out there a little bit more. I was a little bit concerned with the first-team defense. It was kind of much of the same. And I know Lamar Jackson's a playmaker, but they're still not wrapping up on tackles. And the secondary still kind of had the same issues as they did last year. The linebacker, I'm not sold on anybody at the linebacker position outside of Blake Martinez. And as much as I like Blake Martinez, half of his tackles come 15 yards, unfortunately, past the line of scrimmage.
Right.
But at least he plays with some fire out there. The one thing I can say, like the one player that I watched last night defensively, and I said, this guy is a superstar, and he's just going to continue to get better every year, is Kenny Clark.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's fun, right?
A very short sample size last night, but you just saw it. He continues to get better. He's going to have to be double-teamed. I mean, you lose Mike Daniels, obviously, but I'm not really worried about the defensive line. I'm still concerned with the secondary. All that money, all the draft picks that you spent, but Adrian Amos does definitely look like a playmaker, and that's another positive that I took away. He doesn't shy away from contact, which is good. I saw more from him last night than I saw from Kentrell Bryce and HaHa Clinton Dix the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Just the fact that he wants to get in there, he makes tackles, and he doesn't shy away from contact. How many times did we see in Clinton Dix this final season in Green Bay, or that half of a season before they let him go, that he would just dive away from tackles?
Yeah,
and I know money was coming up for him, but he didn't want to hit. And Adrian Amos does want to get in there and mix it up a little bit. So I guess there's a couple good takeaways. 414-799-1250. If you saw anything that we haven't mentioned, give us a call. You could also tweet at us, 105.7 FM, The Fan. Hit us up on Facebook, Instagram. Catch us on the radio.com app as well. So what you know, you're doing the game last night. Anybody in the booth have any takeaways, or was it the same thing? Like you said a couple preseasons ago, you said, hey, what did we learn, you know, tonight? And everybody was like, I have no idea. Was it kind of the same thing last night?
I feel like we learned a little bit more because you had a little more time on the field with guys that will play in a regular season. So you saw Lamar Jackson. Yeah. You saw the Ravens run. You saw exactly what you guys were talking about yesterday, that the Ravens are about to be Navy on offense.
Right.
Aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
They're going to just run and run and run and then run some more.
Yeah.
And they're going to be dangerous enough that it's going to be tough to stop them. Like Mark Ingram. If you haven't, I don't want to venture into fantasy land, but if you haven't drafted fantasy, you have to think of Mark Ingram as a viable option because he's just going to get the ball a ton.
Oh, yeah. We can go down that fantasy route, though. I mean, everybody's drafting this weekend or next, so I mean, I'm with you, though.
That's one, right?
And then just the team defense. I mean, they were number one in team defense, the Ravens were last season, and I know that's Deshaun Kizer out there,
yeah,
but they fly to the ball, man.
You can see it.
They have some playmakers, even when they lose a guy like Za'Darius Smith,
mm-hmm,
which kind of scares me a little bit. It's like, how maybe they know something that we didn't know, because if they didn't want to throw the money out there to keep Za'Darius Smith, maybe the Packers shouldn't have thrown it all his way, but that's way too early to say things like that. But I'm with you. And it's funny what the Ravens are doing is you could see that. So Lamar Jackson's obviously their starting quarterback. That's why they parted ways with Joe Flacco, who's now in Denver. But even behind him, it's all running quarterbacks. They drafted Trace McSorley from Penn State. He comes into that game last night, and maybe a guy I knew, he does like to wager on preseason football. He's got a little bit of an issue. I told him not to do it, but he's a big Packer homer. He took the Packers +4 last night.
Oh, wow.
And that start, Lamar Jackson, 2 scoring drives. I mean, granted, they're both field goals. But right off the gate, it's 6-0, and he's thinking, uh-oh, here we go. I'm going to lose money. It's 6-3. Out comes Trace McSorley, who everybody says, this guy's not a starting NFL quarterback. He can't throw a 15-yard pass. He comes in there, leads a scoring drive, and my buddy's like, uh-oh, I'm in some trouble. And the Ravens have covered the last 15 preseason football games under Harbaugh, too. But what the Ravens are doing is genius, because so their scout defense and their second-team offense, nothing skips a beat, because you have Lamar Jackson, your backup quarterback was RG3, mm-hmm, he's hurt, another running quarterback, Trace McSorley's in there, and then all of a sudden there's Joe Callahan, who gets some revenge last night.
Oh,
how about
man.
That? He comes in and just throws a dime against his former team.
He did this in such a great way for us on the broadcast booth, too, because it's, you know, the way it goes in real time is hey, look, there's a new guy in at quarterback, and that's the ex-Packer, Joe Callahan. And there goes this long pass right down the sideline, complete for whatever it was, 35 yards and a first down. Like, oh, right, this guy. You know, yeah. Like, that was kind of Effie's reaction. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Callahan, who guys were calling for a couple seasons ago. Put Joe Callahan in there. Let's see what he could do. And that's kind of what the Tim Boyle conversation has been. Last night, he gets a whole lot of time to show what he could do, and it wasn't a whole lot. Mm-mm. I'm not sold on either quarterback. Kizer shows flashes, but he still has the same issues where he stares down the receiver that he's going to go to.
Yep.
His football IQ is still not all there, but he is an athlete.
Right.
Like, all the skill set is there for DeShone Kizer. So as much as I joke around, like, get Boyle in there, I've seen enough, I guess he's the more reliable backup, but I don't think you have yourself in a good position if Aaron Rodgers does go down. I'd like to think outside the box, but there's not a whole lot of veteran quarterbacks out there right now.
And as you mentioned, you were talking before about the Packers are not the team that brings in a Ryan Fitzpatrick and has him sit there. And if the unthinkable were to happen again, they're probably in a bad position because of that. Is DeShone Kizer going to help you on that 12-4 run? Don't think so.
No.
Rodgers is one injury, and it should be because he's one of the most valuable people in the league. I don't care how you look at it.
Right.
So it's one injury that, yes, is going to affect the season of your team, but there is an enormous drop. There is not a guy who can keep the seat very warm. There's not a Ryan Fitzpatrick that comes out and he can give you one or two good solid weeks and help you compete for a little bit. And then...
Yeah, then the tape's out on him and everybody's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, he just likes to throw streaks down the field.
And then he has that four-pick first half. Right. He turns into Nathan Peterman and then, you know, whoever comes in after that. So there is not... That guy's not there. Kizer is the closest thing to that guy, but if Rodgers is gone, that offense is going to change significantly and very much for the worse.
And that's, I guess, what's weird to me, is that when you look at the backup quarterbacks each year that are backing up Aaron Rodgers, never with the same skill set. And I get that it's tough to find anybody that could imitate what Aaron Rodgers does on the football field, because what he does, we've never seen before. You know, catching too many men on the field. He's trying to draw guys off sides. He's always looking for free plays. And the fact that he could roll to his left and throw a 50-yard dart to his right. He can make any throw. He can make most throws that most guys can't. But, like, the skill set between him and DeShone Kizer is so different that it makes you wonder when he does step in there if you could run the same offense. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like I brought up with the Ravens. That's why I brought that up. When Lamar Jackson isn't in the game, RG3 does the same exact things. Trace McSorley does the same exact things. I don't think Joe Callahan makes that team. But so the offense doesn't skip a beat. I just don't see that with Kizer or really Tim Boyle. So I don't know. I mean, there's really no names out there. Mark Sanchez just retired. I guess that's a name that you could go after if the quarterback play continues to be brutal. But he's not much better than DeShone Kizer or Tim Boyle or Manny Wilkins for that part. So, I don't know. I mean, once again, we go into a season and it's like, you have to protect Aaron Rodgers. And if he misses even 2-3 weeks, season over, in my opinion, because you can't afford to lose 2-3 games with a backup quarterback. And it's like, even when we brought up that run a couple years back when Rodgers went down with the collarbone and you had to go to Matt Flynn and you had to go get him off the streets, though, because your backup quarterbacks were Seneca Wallace and Scott Tolzien. Like, you just have to plan a little bit better. And I get that he's the face of the franchise. I sometimes wonder if, remember when the Packers drafted Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre was not so happy, right?
Sure.
Because he's the man, and he doesn't even want to think about a backup quarterback. He's never leaving a game. But do you think, like, if the Packers were to bring in a viable backup, like a Ryan Fitzpatrick, I'm just throwing that name out there. I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick's any good. But he's a serviceable backup, better than DeShone Kizer. Do you think that Aaron Rodgers would kind of have hurt feelings or feel like, not that his time's coming to an end, but like, what are you guys saying? I'm going to get hurt? I don't know. I just feel like he's very sensitive and that may bother him. So he likes to have guys lesser than him backing him up. It's kind of like I'm not the best looking guy. So if I'm single and I'm going to go to a nightclub and I want to meet girls, I bring my fat, ugly friend because he makes me look like Johnny Depp in 93. You know what I mean, though? I think that Rodgers likes to have, like, Brett Hundley behind him, DeShone Kizer. He doesn't want somebody that can throw the football behind him.
Yeah, there's no need to worry about anything in his future. There's some security in that. It's entirely possible, right? The stories that have come out and the things you hear over the last couple of years, that is entirely possible. I think that Rodgers could be and probably at some point will be much closer to what you're talking about if they draft a quarterback in the first round coming up. Because... Look, you got to face anybody who, you know, is trying to do the same things they're doing 10 or 15 years ago on a sporting realm, no matter what level, from, you know, whatever softball up to this, can tell you that you're older than you've ever been. Mm-hmm. And Rodgers is older than he's ever been. And that, at some point, it's going to mean you have to be ready. Like, 5 years ago, it was a funny discussion. Like, oh, we, you know, there should be a backup in case something really goofy happens. And now it's like,
no, Rodgers, we really need one.
Yeah, like, he's pushing upper 30s now. Like, you know, and not everybody is Tom Brady. Not everybody's going to sleep in a hyperbaric chamber or whatever that thing is, you know?
Yeah, and I'm with you. And I was upset when people were bringing up, should the Packers draft a quarterback in the first round with the first two picks, or the first two first-round picks, because I was like, no, there's way too many holes on this defense. The secondary is still awful. Granted, you've used all your picks the last 3 years on members of the secondary, but it hasn't gotten any better. There's still too many holes at the linebacker position. You could afford another tight end because Jimmy Graham's best days were 4 years ago. You can't waste two first-round picks on a backup quarterback like a Drew Lock. But I wouldn't have been too upset if they did reach for somebody in the fourth or fifth. But I feel like next year might be the year to do it, or even the year after, because I look at the quarterback class next year and the year after, and it's just going to be, there's going to be so much talent there. Not only in the first round with the guys that we know, like Tua and Justin Herbert from Oregon, but, you know, some of the mid-major schools even. It may be time to look at a better backup, a serviceable backup, and think about the future. Because how many, I know Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, all these guys, they want to play into their mid-40s, but just one hit, one bad hit. I mean, look at Alex Smith.
Right.
He's not going to play this year. He almost lost his leg. You go back to the Joe Theismann injury. It's like, yeah, we like the plan for Rodgers to play another 5-6 years, but you just never know in the NFL. And that's
things can happen. You could, if you have an issue with protection, one play, an issue on one play.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, it's a bit of a scary proposition, and you've got a franchise and you got a whole lot of other moving parts that you would like to not fall apart.
Exactly. 414-799-1250. What did you take away from preseason game number 2, a loss to the Baltimore Ravens? It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakery, live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. We'll be back after this.
First and goal, Boyle. Good time clock by Jenkins. Touchdown, Shepherd. Shepherd has caught his second touchdown pass in 2 weeks for Green Bay. 7-yard touchdown pass, Boyle, his third touchdown pass in 2 games.
He makes it sound good. That's Kevin Harlan making that sound pretty decent, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a thing.
That was a little bit louder than I needed here in the morning. Wow, was that call extremely loud? I wanted to play the Kevin Holden version.
Oh, yeah.
Could you give us... can we get a little, what was the call like?
Yeah, you want my version of it? Because he looked at Moore first, right? What, if I remember the play, Tim Boyle was looking at Jamon Moore. He was staring down Jamon Moore, and I actually made a reference of it. You know, it was something like, en la escopeta, see, it's in the morning.
I really got
to break this
come
thing
on
up.
Send it.
En la escopeta, Mariscal de Campo, Tim Boyle mirando a Jamon Moore. No hay Jamon Moore. Darius Shepherd, la zona rotación. Touchdown! 6 puntos en verde y oro para los empacadores de Green Bay. Something like that?
Nice.
I don't know.
Nice. Well done, sir.
But it was funny because that was the drive where they came alive, right? And it started with a run. There was a decent run there.
Yeah.
At the start of that drive, and that sort of opened things up. And then it was like boom, 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 3 long passes. And that that touchdown was a nice little piece of work. It was back of the end zone, Darius Shepherd. But the whole thing started as he stalls to look at his depth chart. The whole thing started
Hall.
With Darren Hall. That's
Darren
who
Hall.
It was. Yeah,
our boy Darren Hall, 6 foot, 217 pounds, out of Pittsburgh, born on September 6, 1996. If I was doing that call right there, I'd be like, Boyle looks, finds Jamon Moore, remembers he can't catch, finds Darius Shepherd in the back of the end zone. Darius Shepherd's going to make this team, right?
Darius Shepherd is, okay, there is a guy that flashed, and it's Darius Shepherd.
Absolutely.
He did. He flashed because he's showing you a couple of different things.
Yeah.
Shepherd and Lazard, too.
I like Alan Lazard a lot.
Yeah.
And I got to cover him when he was in college, so it's kind of like he's my underdog this year.
Yeah.
He has all the physical gifts. You know, when he was there, when he was a freshman, they just really couldn't find a way to get him the ball. But his sophomore year, he was so damn good. And I was like, this kid's going to be an all-pro. And then just, I don't know what it is. If maybe his 40 time wasn't great. I know he's not the strongest dude. But, like, he has the physical presence out there. And he's making some big plays.
Yeah.
Problem was, he's in the wrong camp because Jake Kumerow, again last night, he was making DeShone Kizer look good last night. His route running is excellent.
Yeah, and that was those were plays on the other side of the field, too. We're not talking about a guy who's getting you into the red zone. We're talking about a guy who's continuing drives at your own 30, and that's big.
It really is. And we were talking about Jake Kumerow like last year. You know, it was like he was the new Jeff Janis, right? He is not Jeff Janis. This guy could be I think he could be a slot receiver, maybe a 3 or 4 in this offense. Because obviously it's going to be Davante Adams is your number one. He's going to see most of the targets. Geronimo Allison again last night. Mm-hmm. Geronimo was having a great year last year before the injury. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Rodgers trusts him. MVS, we have to expect big things from. He spent his offseason working with Randy Moss. Aaron Rodgers does nothing but praise him. He even said, the guy's almost too fast for me. Like, we have to get on. That's why they can't get on the same page. He's running a 4.240, and he's a burner. So once they do get that connection going, I think he's your 3. But then that four spot, I think, is up for grabs. You got Jake Kumerow. I know a lot of people are high on Trevor Davis, not just as a returner or the gunner this year, but as part of the offense. I don't know about all that. Alan Lazard's making plays. It's going to be tough cutting some of these guys at the receiver position.
It may not be as tough cutting Jamon Moore if he keeps dropping passes, though.
He's out already in my book. I've seen enough from Jamon Moore, and I really I hope he catches on because he seems like a nice enough kid.
Right.
But, I mean, the drops are troubling. This is year two. He still doesn't know where he's at sometimes on the field. The route running is great. It's just he cannot catch the football. And you can't rely on that. Not when there's guys making plays in camp. Not when Jake Kumerow's out there making plays. Not when, you know, Alan Lazard's out there making plays. There's just really no room for a guy that can't catch the football.
Darius Shepherd, I mean, we were just talking about how his chances to make the team have gone up. I mean, you are dropping an enormously long list of names, and that's 53 spots overall. They can't keep everybody. So they have got to make some really tough decisions, and the last thing you want when you're down at that level of the depth chart is to be trending downward, and that's exactly where Jamon Moore is at right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll talk with our Green and Gold insider, Ryan Wood. He'll join us at 8:20. We could talk a little bit about that, some guys that may be on the bubble. You know, just trying to think of what else I took away from last night. The quarterback play, not very good. The offense just as a whole. You know, the offensive line, I'm expecting big things from the offensive line. There's always talk that Rodgers gets hit, and it's always a lot of blame falls on the offensive line, but I don't know if you're into Pro Football Focus and all that, but their grading last year actually had the Green Bay Packers as the number one offensive line in pass protection.
Wow.
Just Rodgers doesn't like to play within the pocket is the problem. I still worry a little bit about injuries, though. Guys like Bulaga, you know, if you lose Bakhtiari, we always say if you lose Aaron Rodgers, season over. I think if you lose David Bakhtiari, season over.
Yep.
So I'm trying to look at who the backups are going to be. I'm not really sold on guys like Cole Madison right now. And I know that he had to take the year off and had the troublesome, a really rough year with his friend committing suicide and whatnot the year before. But yeah. I don't know. I'm just trying to find some bright spots on that offensive line in the backup positions. And I feel like, you know, Billy Turner we hear a lot about, and guys are just going to kind of have to rotate around. So you really need that offensive line to be healthy, especially because we're expecting such big things from Aaron Jones this year. I can't wait to see Aaron Jones get on the field.
And to me, that there is where you can finally put a real stamp on what the Matt LaFleur offense looks like early on. It's the one thing that keeps me from actually reading something into what I've seen, right?
Yeah.
Is that that Matt LaFleur is doing, from a structural standpoint, what he wants to do, which is he is going to rely on a run game. He is going to have his runners take care of business. But in the personnel that he's got out there, it's Trey Carson and Dexter Williams. You're not getting a read on your first team offense with Trey Carson and Dexter Williams. I would like to see Aaron Jones, even if it's for a minute. I'd like to see Jamal Williams, obviously, even if that's for a minute.
Yeah.
Then you get a read, right?
Yeah.
Because then the defense really does have to pay attention. Because if you're, you know, preseason and regular season are highly separated.
Yeah.
But especially when your defense looks back there and sees 32 or 22 and they're like, oh, yeah, okay.
I just feel like it's all, like, I like the dress rehearsal of it all. So as far as preseason goes, we talked about this yesterday. Even if Aaron Rodgers does play last night, if Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones play last night, they're probably not going to show a whole lot because they don't want the Bears to see it for week one, you know?
Right.
And so all I really want to see is just guys in their pads. Like Aaron Rodgers, go up to the line of scrimmage, even if it's just a handoff to the fullback or a couple runs to Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. Everything just really safe. Just almost to have like the dress rehearsal, to have the feel of an NFL game on a Sunday. You know what I'm saying? Like where you go in that huddle. You don't even have to drop back and pass and risk an injury. Just to kind of go through the motions. That's what I'd like to see in the preseason. You know, just like a big dress rehearsal. Like, That's what you used to do if you played high school or college football on that last day before the game, and it was kind of like the walkthrough. You would just get in your pads, go out there, and you would take victory snaps and just take the knee and like get it in your head, like, okay, this is the goal for tomorrow. We want to win this game, and then take that knee and go celebrate. But just like to go through the motions, I feel like that's important, especially with the first-year head coach for somebody like Aaron Rodgers, a veteran. We know he can make every throw. We know that he could play within the offense. I mean, that's what we're hoping. But you got to go through the motions and get used to it. That way, week one, you know, it's not like, holy crap, like, we haven't done this before.
And you leave yourself open to what happens and has happened for a lot of regular seasons here. 1-2 start, everybody freaks out about August.
Start, yes.
Yeah, that happens every year, right? It's like, when they're 1-2, it's like, well, if we had seen more of this team in August, if they'd spent more time together in August,
right,
on the field as a unit together as a first, I mean, you hear it every year, valid or not, it comes, like, it's a wave,
right?
And so 1-2 leads to that. And the thing about this Packers first 3 weeks of the season is they are a super talented team who could still go 1-2.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without like, you know, a major trip up. They're at Chicago to start the year.
And then Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily be 1-2 without being a bad football team.
Well, and that's why I laugh when people talk about strength of schedule. Like, everybody's talking about the Bears regressing, which I think that they are going to this year because they led the league in takeaways last year. It's tough to do that 2 years in a row. They stayed very healthy. Like, Khalil Mack missed some games last year. Roquan Smith missed some games last year. But for the most part, they were healthy throughout the season. And so I always laugh, though, when people say, well, they play the toughest schedule. All schedules are tough. We know nothing. Each year, you know nothing about the NFL. Like, you can't say, well, the Bears were 5-11 last year, because then the next year they go 12-4. Like, there's just so much jump from, I don't know how to put it. Like, I can't scoreboard, like, I can't go on the schedule and circle these games. Like, I can't even circle the Denver game a win for the Packers.
Right.
You just don't know what these teams are going to look like. Most teams, if they did struggle the year before, have first-year head coaches. There's so many first-year head coaches this year. I mean, Vic Fangio, all these young guys. So I just really don't know what to expect from most of these teams. Like, we don't know what Kirk Cousins is going to look like. This is the second year for him in Minnesota. First year in another new system, but everybody's saying this is a quarterback system for him to be playing in. I have this weird theory, and everybody disagrees. Bart, Chuck, everybody's predicting the Lions to finish dead last. I could see the Lions being good this year.
Right.
I really could see the Lions being good this year. I could see Matthew Stafford putting together a pretty solid season. I think the defense has gotten much better. They have Mike Daniels. I mean, the pass rush, I think, has gotten a little bit better, and they got some guys that are hungry. And I think the coaching staff, I mean, we laugh at the Lions. The Green Bay Packers haven't beat the Lions in 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
In the last, they're 0-4 in their last four against the Lions.
Oh,
people forget, man.
Oh, my goodness.
People forget. I would not be surprised if the Lions finish 5-11 and dead last in the NFC North. But I also wouldn't be surprised if somehow the Lions managed to win 11 or 12 games. Because people called me crazy when I said the Bears were going to win the North last year.
Yep. They have talent. The Lions have talent. You know what's weird is, something has taken me away from Packers-Lions a couple of different times the last few years. Packers-Lions happened at the same time as the Orange Bowl.
Okay.
That was Badgers in Miami.
Yeah.
So I was supposed to cover Packers-Lions, but I got moved. I was on assignment in Miami at the Orange Bowl.
Oh, darn.
Which, no offense, that in December versus Detroit in December, I think I won that one.
Absolutely.
And then When the Brewers made the playoffs and played the Rockies, they had the one road game. You remember they had the sweep against the Rockies?
Yeah.
That was the same day as Packers-Lions.
That's right.
So I had missed that game. I was supposed to go to that. And so two straight years I've missed out on Detroit.
In quotation marks, missed out.
Missed out.
Because those were two meaningless games against the Lions,
Thinking about that flying back from Baltimore, how I missed out on going to Detroit the last 2 years.
Yeah, Miami over Detroit is always a way better option. I've been to Detroit one time. I tell the story, and I'm like, I pull in there, and I pull into the downtown area. I'm like, man, Detroit gets a bad rap. This is actually a pretty nice city. And then I drive a little bit further, and a guy like pops out of a garbage can eating trash, and I'm like, oh no, Detroit really is as bad as people say. So yeah, I'm with you. I'd probably rather be in Miami. But I don't know. I could see the Lions being decent this year. I could see the Packers winning the division. I could see any of these teams actually winning the division, and I could see any of these teams finishing 6-10. I think there's going to be a lot of parity in the NFC North.
It'd be fun.
And not only the NFC North, but just the NFC as a whole. Like, I feel like every team is going to be like 9-7, 10-6 this year. I don't think we're going to get that 13-3, 14-2 team. Not even the Rams, because we don't know what the hell's up with Todd Gurley's knee.
One, by the way, one of these days, maybe later this morning, because I know, you know, we're running up on time, but I got a story from Detroit, from the Rodgers to Rodgers play, the Hail Mary.
Oh, yeah.
You got
a good one on that?
I'm telling you, my story might be the best one you've heard from that game.
We got plenty of time to get into that. We're going to talk Packers football with you all day. What did you take away from that game last night? 414-799-1250. Ryan Wood from PackerNews.com is going to join us at 820. Bill Schmid is going to talk some Brewer baseball with us at 9. And speaking of the Brewers, last night, the Brewers pick up a win without even having to step on the diamond. We'll explain next. It's Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Two with the bases loaded and one out.
Oh my God!
Deep to right field, way up there and way out of here. Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
Did you hear the very Philadelphia sounding "Oh my God" at the start of that home run?
I did.
Was that Larry Anderson?
It was.
The color guy in Philadelphia, former pitcher?
Yes.
That makes that call for me. Because he reacts before there's any sort of anything. Like, Harper turns and he's like, oh my God!
It was unlike anything I've seen in a while. That ending of that game, I was double watching because I got the 4TV set.
Dude.
And I was watching Phillies Cubs on the bottom screen. I had the Cardinals over to my right, and then the Packers preseason game, which I muted mid-third quarter, only because I wasn't listening to you, Kev.
That's all right.
If it was you, I would have had you on there, but I'm not bilingual, unfortunately. It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakery, 414-799-1250. If you want to talk some Packers football, we're going to take a quick break from that right now and talk a little Brewers baseball, because they pick up a big win last night without even having to step on the field. Cardinals lose last night, and the Cubs blow a 5-0 lead. They led 5-0 going into the bottom of the eighth inning. Philly gets a run in the bottom of the eighth. Then in the bottom of the ninth, they put 6 on the board with a Bryce Harper grand slam as the winner. They beat the Cubs 7-5 last night. Right now the Chicago Cubs are going through some issues in their bullpen because of injuries. Craig Kimbrell, who they just paid all that money to, already out. So they had to rely on Pedro Strop last night. He was rough. Then they bring in Derek Holland to face Bryce Harper with the bases loaded. And you just saw it coming. You saw it coming. And he serves him up a meatball right down the pipe, a fastball, a four-seamer, and Harper, I don't think the thing's landed yet. Harper, I think, got to home plate before that ball landed. He sprinted.
Yeah, he did.
He was screaming. He was yelling. Everybody in Philadelphia was going nuts. It was a great moment for the Phillies fans. Great moment here for Brewers fans, because the Cubs fall once again on the road. They get swept by the Phillies. They're in Pittsburgh starting tonight. So you know they're probably going to at least pick up a win or two this weekend. But, I mean, you didn't even have to step on the diamond last night. And the Cardinals lose. The Cubs lose. This is what I was telling everybody last week. This division, not over. Not over.
No.
The Cubs are a completely different team away from Wrigley Field. I know we brought up the Twins team that won a World Series way, way, way back that had the worst road record in Major League Baseball or something like that, or way, way below 500. But this Cubs team, I've never seen anything like it, where you could be so good at home, have the second-best home record next to the Dodgers, and be so awful away from Wrigley Field. And the way that they're losing these games, I feel last night was a really big night for Brewers baseball, or maybe for the Cardinals. Because I was watching that game, and after Derek Holland serves up that meatball and the Phillies are celebrating on the field, like the look in the Cubs dugout, like
yeah.
You would have thought that they just lost game 163 at Wrigley Field.
Yep.
They were shocked. Rizzo homered for like the third time in 2 months. His power numbers, we were just talking about that yesterday. It seemed like they finally got over the hump and we're going to pick up a road win. Yu Darvish was tremendous. He hasn't walked anybody in like 5 starts or something like that, something that hasn't been done since 1908 for a Cubs pitcher. Jose Quintana struck out 14 at career high the other night, and they still lose both of those games. That's stuff that you can't come back from. I know it's the regular season and it's August, but we're getting late here. I know there's a lot of baseball to be played, but that's a heartbreaking loss and something that you just don't bounce back from.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing, and you've got a race like this that are 3 teams, you know, where it's not just you and someone else, but it's you and, you know, when you're 3 wide, to use the NASCAR term, that is significant for both of the other teams.
Yeah.
So now, the instant thought process, as Bryce Harper's home run ball lands, here's your instant thought process. Cubs and Cardinals are tied. The Cardinals have played two fewer games, so they're kind of in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you've got a lot of baseball left, so it's not like the decision is the division is decided on those two games, right? But they are they have played two fewer games, so they can control their own destiny. And then I got to thinking about this, about the Brewers. All that has to happen now is for them over the last 41 games of the regular season to be two games better than the Cardinals and the Cubs. You're getting to the point where random can almost allow that to happen. I mean, you have to win games. You have to do the right things, execute, you know, bullpen has to be good, whatever. But you don't have to be superhuman. You just have to be two games better than the Cardinals and Cubs over the 41-game stretch to end the year. That's, you're not asking for the moon anymore. And the entire rotation's hurt, right?
Yeah.
You know, Zach Davies is finally going to be coming back, and Brandon Woodruff is going to be coming back. Can you start to see this like fog clear for the Brewers, where maybe they're just good enough to get in, and then all of a sudden everybody's healthy and ready?
Right, and that's exactly my point. Like, I would rather get hot and healthy right now,
yep,
than start off. And they got off to a hot start. I mean, the opening week. But I would rather get hot right now than be hot in June, July, and then kind of fade off and not be playing your best baseball. Then teams start to catch up, and even if you do win the division, then you kind of hobble into the postseason.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whereas if you get hot right now and you're playing your best baseball, it's almost better to be playing like in a division race where every game matters and every game almost feels like that postseason atmosphere. Like, that's why I love those series against the Cubs at Miller Park, or the series against the Cardinals where Miller Park is filled. You know, it's a sold-out crowd, and you just have that postseason atmosphere because you're almost like getting into the zone early, 2 months early. And when you look at the division, all the complaining and all the we're in the done club, fire council, what's wrong with Josh Hader? The past 10 games, the Brewers have been the best team in the division, and I know that's a small sample size, but they're 6-4 in their last 10. Cubs 4-6 in their last 10 on the road. Cardinals 5-5 at 500. Cincinnati 5-5. The Pirates are awful. They're 2-8 in their last 10. 20 games below 500 in the basement of the NL Central. But it's anybody's division right now. So you got the Cardinals and the Cubs. They're tied atop the division. The Cardinals are 63-56. Cubs 64-57 after last night's 7-5 loss to the Phillies. Then you got the Brewers, 63-58. Now just one game back in the division. 6-4 in their last 10. And as you just said, getting Zach Davies back, Brandon Woodruff will eventually be back. So now it's just, can the bullpen get things going? Like, can Josh Hader find it again? Can Jeremy Jeffress regain what he had last year? That's the big questions, is I think that if you do get what you the bullpen doesn't have to be what they were last year. But if you could just, if they could beat you halfway, and I think that you're set up for success right now, a game behind in the division.
So you have to catch up to St. Louis and Chicago. You said there the Brewers are the best team in the division over the last 10.
Mm-hmm.
In the next 10, they face the Cardinals four times. In the 10 after that, they face the Cardinals twice and the Cubs five times. They also face Washington and Houston in that stretch. Washington is next, and then Houston is in that other 10, that 10 that follows the 10 that are coming up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're playing a lot of good teams, but the point is you can't ask for this any better than the Brewers have it. You don't have to scoreboard watch. You can beat the teams you need to beat head-to-head in the next 22 games or whatever.
Right.
It was like doing math on radio, right? 21 games or something like that. They play in St. Louis and Chicago, a good chunk of those games. Like, this is their time. And a lot of the pessimism that you mentioned, a lot of the done club, and you know, the team has had its frustrating moments, but man, they're in a position, and it's not like, you know, eight things have to happen for them to win the division.
No, they're in a better position right now than they were at this time last season.
1,000%.
And people forget that.
1,000%. They were a fun team that was going to kind of limp in and maybe not make the postseason, and then we'd start thinking Packers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then September happened, and it was just magic for 2 months. September in the regular season, October in the postseason, right? I mean, it was magical.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that switch can be flipped back on, but this doesn't necessarily need magic, just good baseball.
Exactly. And the Cubs are not a good baseball team. I've been saying that throughout the season. On paper, yes, they have all the talent, but there's just something that's not right with that team. I don't know if it goes beyond the front office with the Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon rivalry that they keep downplaying. There's something that's not right with that team. And Joe Maddon just continues to overmanage, especially with the bullpen. And he does it again last night. Derek Holland. He had Rowan Wick, whatever that guy's name is. And he walks one. And then it's like he's so quick to pull that switch and play the matchups. And that's what we talk about with Council. Like, you could say the same thing with every manager. Everybody gets a little cute, picks their matchups. And then when it doesn't work out, you know, we throw him under the bus. But I think Craig Council's doing a great job. He's got this team 5 games over .500 with all the injuries. You could say he's managing with last year's bullpen, but he kind of has to because he doesn't have the starters that could go out and give him 7 to 8 innings. When you got guys like Gio Gonzalez, yeah, serviceable starters, but they can't throw 110 pitches. So tonight we get Adrian Hauser. He's 5-5, ERA right at 4. And that first pitch, 6:05, Brewers and Nationals. And yesterday I posed the question, do you think they got a shot at winning the division? We see it again last night. The Cubs just can't win on the road. Now, they go to Pittsburgh, and you're thinking, okay, the Pirates, 20 games below .500. They're 2-8 in their last 10. They're awful since the All-Star break. But I still feel like they have a shot at winning that series because the Cubs right now can't win on the road. I don't think it matters who it is. I think the Cubs could go into Miami, and they would probably still get swept because there's something psychologically not right with this team right now on the road. And I've never seen anything like it.
It's bizarre, and it is... The team is more talented than the record shows, in my opinion. I mean, there's a lot more talent that's there, and that's the sort of thing that leads to unrest.
Just like the Brewers, though, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you this, if the Brewers had anywhere near that rotation that the Cubs had and they were underperforming, there would be people screaming on your phone lines right now. Like, right now, the Brewers still have the benefit of the doubt that they feel like underdogs because they, you know, the whole world is Wade Miley and Gio Gonzalez and Jordan Lyles, you know what I mean? They scrap heap their pitching staff, their starting pitching staff. So I think it's difficult to root against them in that way, but if they had a Lester or a Hendricks or someone like that and they were still where they are now, people would be going bonkers. And by the way, one of the games that I really like to play when you talk about last year and this year with the Brewers is to look at what happened a year ago today, just to see where the Brewers were, a little snapshot.
Yeah.
Can I give you a snapshot real quick?
Yeah, give me some.
Okay. So they lost to the Cubs 8-4 a year ago today. Hendricks got the win, Guerra the loss. But it's the lineup that's the thing. Travis Shaw was your number 5 batter. He's given you nothing this year. Jesus Aguilar didn't play in this game, but that was not the norm, of course, last year. He was in the midst of a monster year. He gave you nothing this year. Lorenzo Cain was your number 2 hitter. He has dropped off tremendously on offense this year. Jonathan Scope was your starting shortstop. Shaw was at second. Moose, who had just gotten to town, was at third. Manny Pena was your starting catcher. That's the team that caught fire. That's the team that had the magic, right? And this Brewers team is in a better position with no Shaw and with no Aguilar.
It's crazy.
I'm telling you that... I know that there's this tendency to not want to be optimistic with this team, but they are in a better position than they were last year. Crazy.
It is. And it's just, I feel like because it was such a magical season last year and just because everybody was winning games, you know, it was just a different feeling. It was just a different feeling. And it was kind of new to everybody. I mean, the year before you made that run and then the Cubs got hot and you missed out on the postseason. So, like, it was a different feeling because it was kind of fresh and new. And then you get the postseason success. You're within a game of the World Series. So you think, well, we're going to be right back and we're going to be better next year. And then when that doesn't happen, it's like freakout mode. I saw a crazy stat last night going back to that Cubs loss, just because I'm just baffled by this. It was the first time the Cubs lost since the mound was set to its current distance in 1893 when their starting pitcher threw at least 7 innings, allowed no walks or runs, and struck out at least 10. You have a 5-0 lead going in to the bottom of the 8th. The Phillies had lost 316 consecutive games when they trailed by at least 4 runs entering the 9th inning. Entering the bottom of the 9th, the Cubs had a 98.8% chance to win. After Gene Segura, shout out, fly out to lead to the bottom of the 9th, the Cubs had a 99.6% chance to win the game. Harper steps up to the plate. They still had a 67% chance to win that game. So I'm telling you, the magic is there. The Brewers still have a good shot at winning this division. Everybody needs to just relax a little bit.
It's 41 baseball. Games.
It's a long season. You can't freak out after every single loss. Like, you think it's bad to lose a game with Josh Hader serving up a 2-run shot and blowing a save. Imagine losing a game like the Cubs lost last night.
Mm-mm. No, because that's
tough to get back.
That'll mess your confidence up. It really will. And in a key time. Again, you're 3 wide right now. Cardinals are even with you, and they've played two fewer games. The Brewers are a game back and gaining momentum right now.
1 hour down, three more to go here on Chuck and Winkler. When we come back, we'll jump into a little bit more Packer talk. 414-799-1250. Give us your biggest takeaway from preseason game number two. Not a whole lot there. Packers lose to the Ravens. Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.